All right. So this is what we call the afterburn. So if you have any comments or questions or thoughts that you want to share, you can come line up over here by the podium. If you're on the live stream, the Shamash team will take care of you guys over there. We got the Dream Team, Shamash team back there. Okay. And they'll take note of your comments and questions. All right. And we'll begin with one of the Shamashes, Shamash Steve.
Okay. I had a comment, and kind of part of this thought came yesterday as a result of the Torah study, which was pretty good. But you talked about, it says, being set apart. In order to be set apart, we must ask ourselves what we must address about ourselves in order to be set apart. Yet, I think some of us aren't ready because of two reasons. We're afraid to ask the question, or we are not ready to hear the answer.
That's true. Well said. I think a lot of times that really is a problem. I think that people are just not ready to hear the answer. I think it's part of why a lot of people don't come in for counsel. It's because they already kind of know where it's going to go, and they don't want to hear it. They do. They do. All right, Rocky.
Thank you, Rabbi. Okay, so we know Yeshua is the perfect set apart flesh. That everything about his flesh, his emotions, his attitude, everything that he does was set apart. And it says in the Word that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Okay, so, and we also know that it says that Yahweh is never wrong, that when he says something, it will always be. So my question is, and I hope this really pertains to what I'm trying to say, which... can it be set apart? He says that the Word became flesh. So is he flesh forever?
Okay, so it says that the Word put on flesh, okay? And so it's, in other words, the Word was encased in a flesh suit. But isn't that ultimately the goal with the Word, for us to encase it in our flesh? Amen. Okay, so I think that's kind of where Rocky was going with that, all right? And so even though Yeshua in the flesh suit then died and was resurrected and was no longer in a flesh suit, everything he gave us was meant to be brought into and laid up into this flesh suit so that we can go on the same journey to give up the flesh suit. Well said.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Ms. Shira.
Shabbat shalom, Rabbi.
Shabbat shalom. You're looking very glittery.
Yes. Shining like stars in the universe.
There you go.
There we go. Thank you so much for this. And last night's Torah study, this morning's Zoom meeting, just awesome. And so I don't even know where to start, but I'm going to just start in anyway. This thing about worry and stress, and you were talking about how it gets us nowhere. Oh, yeah, it gets you somewhere. It gets you stressed. And they found that stress is one of the biggest causes of all kinds of physical illness and all kinds of, you just sink down and down and down. You might remember several years ago when I had an adrenal overload problem, put me out of commission for over 5 months. Bless Brianna's heart. She was 9 years old. She took over the praise team. Remember that? And I had a lot of time to lie there and just think and wonder, how do I stop this cycle? How do I just stop the little hamster wheel in my head? And it's been a long road, but I finally came to the place, just last February, in fact, where I just said, this is it. I have got to learn how to set my eyes on the goal and stick with it and say, this is the entire purpose of my life. I've got to get there and hear his well done. I want to be a maximalist. And some of the little trails I've been on trying to be a maximalist, but Father always uses you to, correct me and straighten me out. But I thought about, recently you and I were talking about the law of attraction and how you attract what you worry about. You attract what you're thankful for. you attract what's going on in your mind. And it's a law. And Father says there's going to be trials. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but Yahweh delivers him out of them all. If I'm righteous, I'm not worrying, because this is a Torah command from Yeshua. Do not worry. And he just taught what was in, you know, the whole theme of the Tanakh. Do not worry. So it's a Torah command. And if I'm doing it, how can I be righteous? I mean, I've had to learn to be very hard on myself and yet very kind to myself, not allow those thoughts. I'm learning. I'm getting there. Not allowing those thoughts. The littlest irritations in my life that come up that I want to react to, I'm like, oh, shuckins, you know, this and that. And I've been learning to catch myself. Wait a minute. Praise Yahweh. There's a reason for this. What, you know, this isn't a big thing. If I don't learn to conquer my attitude over the little things, how am I going to be in that habit of conquering so that when the big things come along, I can say, praise Yahweh, hallelujah, you have this under control. This is for my good. You love me. I love me because you love me. And getting that in here, getting that where it needs to be. I am loved. I can take all the risks in the universe because I am loved and I am worth something amazing. And I'm so glad you brought that point out about being worth it. I'm going to get there.
Amen.
And I just pray for all my brothers and sisters that you'll see the prize, that you'll really see the prize. You'll see the glory, the beauty of who he is, to spend forever with him. There's just nothing like it. But first, you've got to know his love. You've got to let your thoughts go to the word and believe and say, I'm going to believe this. Even if everything in my past, everything else has wounded me to the place where I'm just knocked down and out, I've got to grab this and believe it. I am loved. He has an amazing destiny for me. Hallelujah.
Amen.
Go for it.
Amen. Mm-hmm. And praise Yah, because I was inspired to look for a verse, and I found the verse literally almost instantaneously, which I thought was really, really good. You know, what Shir was talking about, you know, again, has to do with that perspective. I mean, we're going to suffer. You know, it talks about here in Romans 8:18, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the esteem that is to be revealed in us. I mean, we're going to suffer. There's another verse where it says that Yeshua didn't think it that big a deal, you know, as far as the terrible things they did to him, knowing that where he was going to end up. I mean, not that it wasn't a big deal, but you understand what I'm saying? Like, he knew that what was coming was the point, not what he was going through at that moment. And so that's really a good thing to point out, as well as, you know, if you get your mind occupied and focused, then it can't just run off all over the place. Okay, all right. You ever see a hose on the ground and you got the water blasting and it's just flopping and spinning and blasting everywhere? But what happens when you grab it and hold it? Okay, now it's steady and you can aim it and use it for something. So grab a hold of your mind and aim it at something so that it's not just flying all over the place, just shooting out in all directions. Okay? Grab a hold of your mind and give it something to focus on. This is really where we end up in trouble, is that we have a lack of ability to have our minds focused on something. Give it something to do. No, we like to do empty things. We watch TV and we read junk. We flip through our phones nonstop, scrolling through this, that, and the other junk. We don't actually give our mind something to focus on. Okay? And so I try very hard. Look, when I'm watching, I like to go through, lately I've been liking to go through TikTok from the point of view that I'm seeing nothing but business-related, health-related, finance related, because it gives you whatever it is you tend to watch, and then you hit favorites. And so I'm learning. I'm focusing my mind. I'm learning something. I'm not just sitting there mindlessly entertaining myself. So it gives my mind something to focus on. And I get excited about that. It's hard for me to put the phone down, not because I'm just mind-numbingly entertained, but because that was great. And I write it down. And I learned this, and I learned that. I'm going to try to apply this now in my life. And I'm going to take this exercise I just learned that I could do at home. Or I try to look, I could do this with my accounting and my bookkeeping, or whatever. I could do this with whatever, my investments. I could do this with, right? Okay? I'm trying to give my mind something productive to focus on. Guess what? When I'm doing all of that, I'm not thinking about anything I could be worried about, concerned about, or anything else. Because my mind is busy, focused, and occupied. So it doesn't have any place. It's that idle hands, you know, they say it's the devil's work, whatever. So idle mind is even worse. Okay? Some of you got way too much time to think on your hands, and that's your problem. Give your mind something to focus on, and you won't have much that much of a struggle. Okay? You know, it's like there's an old saying I heard, like, you know, the dog in a hunt doesn't know it has fleas. Because when it's running and hunting down, the little fleas could be biting it. It's not focused on that. It's got its target and it's going. Okay? All right? You know, there was a scene, I love this scene, in Lethal Weapon, the first movie. All right? And I think it was in the first, might have been the second. But anyway, he's going through this house that's being built. And he's going after the guy he's going after. And they're shooting at him and stuff is happening. But he's ignoring all of that. All he's focused on is where he's going. And I just like the image of that. I mean, people are shooting at him. Other things are happening. They're throwing. It didn't matter. I'm going for my target. I have my goal. I'm ignoring everything else. It just seemed to be a great metaphor for me, you know, to be able to focus on something and the other stuff is just, it's a potential distraction. I'm not even going to pay attention to it. I'm going for my goal. Okay, I'm going to go through, and he went through walls, I'm going to go through it, over it, behind, whatever I got to do, I'm going to where I'm going. Okay, whatever I need to do. But that's because the mind was completely laser focused on what his target was. See, if you don't have your mind focused and targeted, it's just going to randomly go into who knows where it's going to go into. So you should have, okay, I'll put it this way. You should have no free time. Because even your free time, you should have planned and occupied with something. So don't just sit around not knowing what to do with yourself. Have something to do. That doesn't mean you don't have any downtime, but make it downtime that you are choosing to do that occupies your mind and those kind of things. Okay? So that you're not just sitting there allowing your mind to just run off into all kinds of terrible, depressing, anxiety, worry-filled places. Because you can't do all of those things being productive. The reason you're not productive is because you're so busy being depressed, worried, and full of anxiety. Be productive, and there's no place for that other stuff. Because your mind has to be on what you're doing. So go get something to go focus on and do. The more it needs your attention, for relaxation, I used to take out 1,500-piece jigsaw puzzles and do them. Why? Because it totally occupied my mind, filling up this puzzle and putting the pieces. And that kept my mind from having to run off in all kinds of other places, but I was also not focused on what I normally did, so to me, it was like a break from what I was normally doing. But I liked that it occupied my mind as I'm doing this big puzzle. Instead of just watching, I find it really hard these days to watch stuff. I put shows on, movies on, whatever, and I can't watch them. There's nothing to occupy my mind enough. So I find myself changing and changing because I can't engage is not enough to get my mind occupied because I'm trying to be productive at all times. So yeah, I do sit down and try to watch stuff. Very hard for me to focus. But that's because I've gotten myself trained that there needs to be a purpose. Okay? There needs to be some reason, something I'm accomplishing. All right, Ashley.
First of all, thank you for the brownies coming because I brought brownies for Oneg.
I hate you.
It's okay.
I'm kidding.
No, I know. But I just wanted to say I find it funny that Agnes wasn't feeling good upstairs, and this is the one teaching I get to come down and listen to, and it's about the subject I had the problem the most.
Good.
So with that, you said that that struck me out because I say it to myself, but I think I say it in a different way where you say, oh, he knows my heart. I say it in, well, I better get my stuff in gear because he knows my heart. As in, like, I know I'm messing up. I need to change it. Is that still okay, or is that treading on the waters that everyone else uses their definition of it for?
I'm sorry. Say it one more time.
Okay. How you said, oh, he knows my heart, like they're trying to use it as an excuse.
Right.
I've said that, but I didn't think I was using an excuse. I was in my head, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, that I try to use it as a motivator, like, oh my gosh, I need to quit because he knows what I'm actually truly thinking instead of doing.
Yes, you can do that. You can definitely do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So in other words, you're saying is the phrase where I talk about, well, he knows my heart. Well, if you understood what that phrase really means, that could be a good motivator. Okay? Because instead of using it as a justifier, using it as a motivator to say, he knows my heart, so I better be careful what it is I'm wanting and how I might be spinning things. Okay? So good. All right? Janet?
I was so happy when you went to Kefa. Or Kefa, I don't know how you say it in Hebrew. I need to take that Hebrew class. Yeah, I'm excited about it, actually. I'm very excited about it that you're starting today. But I have a question about, okay, so you went verse 10, 11, and 12. I really love verse 10 when it says, for he who wishes to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil. You touch a bit on that. But then it said, let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. So the word peace is there, is that shalom? And I wanted you, if you can expand on that word for me. But also, I wanted to know if there seems to be a connection or there seems to be an emphasis on the tongue and shalom. I don't know if there is a connection, probably is, but just looking at these two verses, would you say that the tongue and how we grab a hold of it so that we can stay in the right path with our words? Is that one of the main things we should be working on? Is that one of the traps, like the ones that the test or the trial that is the worst, the one that is harder to achieve, harder to overcome? And that's,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So the idea, the whole thing with peace, we'll be talking about that more next week anyway. So let's see if I cover that next week because it's part of fitting your feet with the good news of peace. So I think we'll cover that somewhat. But the whole thing with the tongue absolutely is connected to your level of peace or shalom, okay? How you use it is going to have a lot to do with, you know, your ability to have, maintain, or create peace, okay?
And Rabbi, I really appreciated what you were saying about laser focused on your goal, you know, no matter what, and you were painting that beautiful picture from that movie. I do have red. It's not, I'm not like you. I have a lot of blue too and white and a little bit of white and yellow. But I was wondering about the red color. You know, there's always a positive and negative for each one. And so with the red, I can do that. I can be very focused on what I'm trying to get. And so would you say that we need to have that red? We need to have all colors, but red is kind of a big color for us to get to the kingdom, to be able to really focus and be driven enough to target each area that we need to work on to become like him. Like, I know I'm working on one right now, and it feels like I need to use that red to not let my mind get it distracted, but focus on it. Thank you, Rabbi.
All right. Okay, so the red. All right, with the colors, whatever. Okay, look. The red should be driving. The red should then be able to allow the other ones to come into play with the filtering or the control coming out of the logical part of the red, the less emotional part of the red. So that way the red can say, okay, blue, your turn, you're up. We need to do some things that are relational. We need to do some things that are task-oriented, whatever it is. Okay, white, we need to have some more peace. We need to calm things down. I mean, it pulls in the colors, but the thing is, don't let the other ones drive, okay? The only one that should have its hands on the wheel should be the red, but the red should be allowing the co-piloting from one of the other colors while it's still maintaining some discipline to the control, if that makes sense. So you could do all the very blue things, white things, yellow things, as long as the red's driving, which maintains balance. It doesn't make sense, okay? So even though you may not be doing anything very red, but if you allow your red at least to have enough of the driver's wheel, then you maintain some balance so you don't go, because you can go off really into unproductive and negative spaces, letting any of the colors drive. Okay, the red driving too could be a problem if it's out of balance, because you get some really, you know, harshness and all this other stuff. But at least the control that's there and the discipline is there in a way that the other ones don't have. Okay, and so I would allow, I mean, if I'm thinking of this emotionally, I would want my red to be the captain of the ship, but allowing the other ones to have their voices when needed, but still the decision to balance that out has to come out of the red. Does that make sense? Okay? Which is the same thing you see in a group dynamic. The red generally is going to be the leader of the group, but that's not going to be fun for everybody or get everything done and held a task and everything if you didn't have some blue and yellow and white and other things happening. Okay? But finding the right balance to have it all stay organized and going forward still requires that. The leadership part is a red quality. So if you struggle with your leadership qualities, you need to bring out more of that red in there. But to lead yourself, you also need to be able to tell the other colors to behave. All right? And that's you know, I told you, I am handicapped without any of that blue, but the blue should never touch the steering wheel. Okay? Fabulous to have the blue. Your intimacy, your relationships, your tasks getting done, wanting to get them done right, all of that other stuff that's great in the blue, but it should never get a hold of the steering wheel. The same thing for the white and the yellow, because you're going to end up in some sort of a ditch, okay, that you really weren't wanting to be in, okay? Or if it's the white leading, you're not going to end up anywhere, okay, because you're not going anywhere, certainly not quickly, okay? And the yellow, you'll end up in a place like, how in the world did we get here, okay? I don't know, but it's fun. It's where the party was. That's why we're here. I have no idea how we ended up here, but this is where the fun is, you know, okay? Okay, so anyway. Mr. Bishop, Ken, go ahead.
You never cease to amaze us. You can use everything, can't you? I think that that's part of what I wanted to try to express with what I've been going through on my walk, especially in this teaching. Today, not just today, but the whole series that you've done up to where we are now, that it is really changing my life a lot, because you take these home and you listen to them again and you digest what you've said, and there's always more deepness, if that's the right word, more in-depth understanding that you gain from it. Today, I wanted to kind of ask this question because I'd like to verify my own walk, what I've been doing, and my growth in this period of time of this teaching, just to ask it in the form of a question, am I seeing this correctly?
Okay.
And so you ended up today talking about submission, and that was one of the biggest problems that we still have, is submitting to the higher authority. That's one of the things that I've been working on a lot, and just by a unique coincidence, just yesterday, Martha and I were talking, and she says, "Well, okay, I'll submit to you." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? Well, if I'm not doing something that I don't want to do for you, then I'm not submitting, because Rabbi says you have, in order to submit, you have to be doing something you don't want to do.
Either you don't agree or you don't want to do it.
That's correct. Or you don't want to do it."
Right.
So it started that process of thinking which ties in to today. I want to take this back to one of your first verses that you talked about. it will relate to my question of in Matthew 6, verse 34, about do not worry. So I'm going to say, you know, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow shall have its own worries. Each day has enough of its of evil in itself. I don't worry anymore.
All right.
Because I have come to the point of trying to submit myself to my higher authority. Through you is Yeshua Elohim the Father. I have gone through so many mental exercises that making decisions about not worrying about this, not worrying about that, and clearing that junk out of my head. And so I thought, well, why don't I bring that up and see if how I got there makes sense? And it really started with the idea of submission, and I heard your teaching about the armor plate, and I probably went through that sort of protection, because if I had a thought coming into my head about I want this really bad, I would think that that's that other voice. This is not going to take me vertical. It's going to take me down. I put that out of my head. I said, go away. I'm submitting to what I know. I would have thoughts of verses coming into my head about endure to the end and you know, those sorts of things that would just keep me wanting to try harder and harder to submit. You talked about in Peter, 1 Peter in 3, you were talking about bending and not breaking. To that verse in there, and that's when I started to say, well, here's my question. I better make this fast. Here's my question. If I'm continuing to submit to higher authority, I'm no longer doing it because submission is not the correct word, because I'm not doing things that I don't want to do. I'm doing things that I do want to do. I want to become more and more like Yeshua. I want to submit to the Father, and I think I'm going into, where am I going? I think that would be obedience. Like I'm trusting in that decision to submit to full authority.
Okay.
That's the question. And I don't have worries.
All right. So here's the thing. If you are practicing submission, the ultimate result is that you'll get to that place where you trust the one you're submitting to the highest level, which then means that you now want to do what you might not normally want to do, and you're not going to have any issues with disagreement. See, submission is what gets you to that place where Yeshua just fully trusted, okay? Because when you fully trust, then you want to do what they say, and you also trust that what they say is right, even if you don't see it and you don't agree with it necessarily, because you're no longer your preference is not in the loop anymore. Well, I don't see it that way. Well, you don't care anymore about that. You only want to see it their way. Okay, so now you no longer have that issue, okay, because you're wanting to please that one above. And that's where Yeshua came in to say, I only do what my Father says.
Right.
Right? All right. So, yes, when it talks about submission, that's because we struggle with our preferential issues. I don't like that, I don't want it, or I don't agree. But if I trusted you enough, believed you enough, then my first reaction would be, if I don't agree, then I must be wrong. So there's no reason for me not to agree. I'm just gonna do it and trust you even though I can't see it. Now it becomes I can't see it even though instead of I don't agree. It doesn't make sense to me. It's not I don't agree. I don't see why that makes sense, but I'm going to do it anyway because I trust you. So now we don't have that same submission problem because we've now learned to trust, okay? But until then, it's doing it anyway, knowing it's the right way to do it. As far as the relationship part, it's right to do it anyway, even though you don't agree and you don't like it and you don't want to do it, all right? Okay. But then through the growth, your attitude will shift, which is what you're saying is happening, where now you want to do it, whether it was something you would have normally wanted to do anyway, now you want to do it, and you're no longer concerned with whether or not it's right or not. Okay, it's kind of like what I said to the guy in the Zoom meeting earlier today. I said, look, you know, the whole issue with the calendar, I said, if you are submitted to me, then all that matters is which calendar I chose, not whether or not you figured out whether it's the right calendar or not. But then you shouldn't be submitted to me if you haven't already chosen and decided that I was the appropriate person to be submitted to. Okay? Okay, good. Thank you, Ken. All right. Pete.
Rabbi, I got a question about Ephesians 6, verse 13. There's a part in there where it says, to withstand in the wicked day, and having done all to stand. What is the having done all? What is that?
Well, again, you know, there's the whole point of all of this that I've been making is that we're to make the full effort. Okay, having done all. In other words, do everything the best you can with all your might, being, and strength as you understand it. So it's having done all, meaning that you didn't leave anything on the field. You didn't hold anything back. You did everything you could.
So I think that in you directly going, I think from here to Matthew, I think the point was that once you've given it your best shot and you've worked it all out and you've done everything you can do, the rest of this verse is to stand.
Yeah.
And it's not to run, it's not to panic, it's to stand. But also importantly, it's for other people to see you stand. It's for other people to see you acting righteously, be an example for those that depend on you, be an example to those who are questioning your walk, and an example to other people in the walk to see you stand and to see you get through that adversity.
Yes. All right, but also understand the idea of standing, okay? If you have done all, we're going to repackage this a little bit. In other words, we're dealing with something like worry. Why do you worry? Because you're afraid something's going to happen or something's not going to happen that you want to have, whatever, so you're worried. But you know what? If you've done all, in other words, if you ask the question, have I done everything I can do in this situation? And if the answer is yes, then what are you worried about? It's either going to happen or it's not. Worrying about it isn't going to change anything. If there's anything you could do, then do it. But if you've done all, then stand and be ready to handle whatever happens. Because I always ask, and we've counseled, a lot of you have counseled me, and I've said that to you. I said, is there anything more you could have done? Is there anything more you could do? Have you done everything you can do? Yes. Then stop worrying about it. Okay? Once you've done everything you know to do, and you've gotten counsel and done anything that was given to do, then there's nothing more to do, except just let it play out. But what if it goes badly? Apparently that was supposed to happen, and you were supposed to learn from it, and you're supposed to handle it or whatever it is. But the question is, have you done all? And so that's a question you should simply ask yourself when you're facing these things that you're worrying about. Is there anything I actually could do about this? No. Okay, well, then don't worry about it. I used to have the same problem in high school when I used to talk to my friends who were freaked out about a test they were going to take. And I would always ask the question, well, did you study? No. So what are you worried about? I'm worried I'm going to fail. What are you worried about? You're going to fail. You didn't study. You should already know what you're going to get. I mean, so why are you worried about it? I mean, you look at what happened and what you've done, and you should know what the result's going to be. Now you're worried about it? Why are you worried about it? Expect it. Okay? You expect you're not going to get the best grade you could have gotten. Now, probably because you didn't study. If you've been learning all through the semester or whatever it was, you might get a decent grade just because you remembered enough stuff. But the thing is, you're not going to get maybe the grade you would have got if you studied. So what are you worried about, though? If I really pushed anybody to the test, which I did a few times, to guess what grade they were going to get, they were always within 3 or 4 points of what they got. They knew what they were going to get, you know. I was never surprised on the downside on any grade I ever got. I was surprised a few times on the upside because I didn't expect the test to be maybe as easy as it was or whatever it was, or some of the questions I guessed on I got right that I didn't expect. But I was never surprised or wrong on the downside. I knew what to expect. So I didn't all of a sudden get like a 70 thinking I was getting a 90. Okay? If I ever got a 70, it's because I fully expected to get a 70. And so that's, you know, that's the difference. All right? All right. Mercy.
So this is almost identical to Are You Covenanted Part 4, which I've been listening to on repeat the last few weeks.
I plagiarized it.
You did.
Yes.
You did. You plagiarized
from
yourself.
From my own
DJ. Yes. So I wonder if you can help me with something regarding worry. So riddle me this, Batman. For me, I don't...
I'm trying not to picture you as Frank Gorshin.
It was a great Batman, though. That was a great Batman.
A great riddler.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, I love
go.
That Batman. Okay, so I'm not a worrier for the most part. What I tend to find happen, which I can't figure out what the root cause of this is and then how to combat that to a certain extent, is I will just be swimming along and then all of a sudden a thought will come that says, you should worry, because if you don't worry, then it appears as though you're ungrateful or it appears as though you're lazy. And then I'm like, oh, should I be worrying about this? Even though I don't feel like I want to worry about it, but should I do it just to save face or whatever, not to look a certain way? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes, and then you call me and I tell you to knock it off.
Right.
which has happened, I'm just saying.
That's it has, but I don't understand with that, because innately I'm not a worrier. You know, I'm like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Let's go with it.
When you do it, you do it pretty good.
Yeah, I can. You know. I can. Because it's that voice that says, you're going to look lazy if you don't worry, or you're going to look ungrateful, or you're going to look arrogant if you don't worry. And I don't know where that's coming from. And
I don't either, because I don't see how those would normally be connected. So it's what you're experiencing, though.
Yeah.
Look, the bottom line is, as I've told you every time we've talked about things that you're starting to worry about, trust it. You're doing what you need to do. Everything's going the way you're supposed to. You're not missing any things that you should have been, like, you haven't left anything on the table, and it's just got to let it play out. And we've had that conversation, you know, a bunch of times, but that's your tendency, right? Each person has their own tendency of how worry comes in and how, you know, we get anxious about something or something. Usually with you, it's about the future. Okay, am I going to get the next gig? Is this going to be what I need? So it's more of an anxiety thing of worry. You're worrying about something that's going to come or not come. And then I reassure you that you're doing everything that needs to be done. There's nothing more to do. And so then it all plays out, ends up playing out fine. So just take that guidance and shut the other voices down, okay? Because there's never a reason to worry, okay? There's like zero benefit to worry, okay? I understand, Mercy, for example, like when your gig is ending, you don't have your next one lined up yet, that there's a concern. And that concern then would motivate you to contact some people and that you normally work with to see if they have work for you, whatever it is, right? But that's a concern that then turns into an action. Worry turns into nothing but just anxiety and emotional distress, okay? So let's try to never worry about anything. If you're concerned, do something, okay? If you don't know what to do, get counsel about what you could do if you're concerned. But let's not turn it into worry. All right, Gerardo.
Yes, sir. To follow up on that, man, she just kind of be striking up some stuff. I'm realizing a few things. I guess I realized something a week ago. Dude, I am petrified, terrified of being broke. I'm allergic to it. Look good, feel good. Listen, we dancing, we moving, we swimming. I'm not getting 2.5 hours of sleep for fun. I'm not hustling. And you know, hustling probably needs to be redefined because people have the word hustling as a bad term. But off what she was saying, something about the future, whatnot, there's no actual fear at all. No fear, no worry. I came to bring it. I told you, Rabbi, listen, I came to fight. You know, I'm not trying to sound repetitive. Oh, and by the way, congratulations, you won the fight. I tap, submit, all the above, like, you know, and you still giving it to me, so thank you.
You're welcome.
But this being said, sir, like, where's the off button? Because my thing is more the off. There's no downtime. There's no downside. There's no in-between. It's always something else. Okay. And I'm not complaining about the saying, no, it's just, where's the breather at?
Okay, all right, listen. This is a good question, okay? It's a real good question. We have to have a metric that you're measuring, okay? And based on that metric, then you'll know when you need to ramp it up and when you can have your downtime. So things, in other words, things are going around pretty good and you have everything under control, then you now can take the go level down a little bit. Not that you're doing less work, but the drive of it. But with the metric saying, but if we ever drop to this level, we got to kick the gear back up. So you're ready to kick it up when needed. But once you have the thing moving along nicely, it doesn't need, you know, if you get your car going up to that whatever speed you're trying to get to, maintaining that speed doesn't take a whole lot. But if it drops down to a certain place, then you got to give it the gas and really bring it back up again. So you need to just have that metric that motivates you that you got to turn the gas back on. And that way you can have the downtime when you have things kind of rocking and rolling on a smooth basis, and it's predictable and it's steady. So then let it be that way. Okay? Because you haven't given yourself a metric. He says it's always there. You haven't given yourself a metric that says, as long as we're going like this, we're good. I don't need to be doing that right now. But if it ever drops to this level, then we kick it back in. And that level doesn't have to be very far down. It could be wherever you decide to set it, okay? It's fine. It's kind of like, you know, we have a supply closet. We use paper towels, use toilet paper, use all these other things in the building. Well, we have an understanding that when it gets to a certain level, we go out and buy more. But until then, we don't worry about or think about it, right? So it's not on our radar until it hits a certain level, because we get a bunch of it. And then when it gets to a certain level, we get more. Well, the same thing with your going through life. If you have life where you have everything you need going the way you need it to go, then take a breath. Don't slow down, but take a breath. Don't keep pushing like you need to do more, but take a breath and do what you're doing. Now, if for some reason that diminishes to a point that you're not happy with, and you can select what that point is, well, then you got to turn up the heat. And that'll give you the ability to have some downtime, okay? Because you may chug along real nicely for a year, 2 years, 5 years. And so why are you stressing and pushing so hard when you're doing okay and you can just let it go, okay? I'm not saying that you ease up off the gas and let yourself go back, but you're not pushing on the gas, okay, and trying to accelerate when you don't need to accelerate. You're already at a good place. Does that help? Okay, but you have to choose that metric as to what level, because then as long as you tell your mind, hey, if it gets to this level, we are going to kick it, so you don't have to worry about it anymore. We're going to go ahead and kick it, but right now we're here, we're good. And if we're good, I can chill a little bit. I don't need to stress. I don't need to push so hard, okay? But you need to reassure your mind that you have a level that if it gets there, we're going to kick it back into gear. Okay? All right? Just tell your mind, hey, this is the level we're looking for. If it ever gets down there, game on. If it's not there, we're good. Okay? All right. All right, live stream. See if we can get a couple of those out real quick. I know we started. We ended up a little bit late. I blame Elder for taking too long with the prayers and stuff. No, kidding.
Well, it's good, Rabbi. We only have two, so.
Well, good.
Rena Zimmerman, how do we, quote unquote, switch our mindset to treasure the above? Is it with counsel are there things that we can do that helps with switching our mindset from treasuring our things to treasuring his things?
All right. Rena, I appreciate the question. Look, we have to be results focused. And by the way, let me just get back to the colors, because this is kind of a color thing, but I want you to know that no matter what I say about the colors, no color is better than the other. As a matter of fact, that's not true. Each color is better in certain situations than the others. Okay? In certain situations, yellow is your best color. Others, white's your best color. Other, blue. So what I told you was red driving. It doesn't mean that you then don't need to bring one of the other colors up and have it be prominent at that moment, depending on the situation. So I don't want you to have everybody think that somehow red's the best color. It's not. Not in every situation. It's certainly not. Okay? So each color has its place. Now, when it comes to this thing, I want to use a red thought, which is a results thought. Okay, you're going to treasure those things that are going to get you what you want. Do you understand what I'm saying? How do we switch our mindset to treasure the above? By training your mind to realize that's the above that's going to get you what you want. And then you value that which is going to get you the result that you want. So if I want to lose weight, then I'm not going to value ice cream and brownies, because that's not going to get me there, okay? I'm going to value whatever it is that I'm going to need to be eating that's going to get me where I'm going, whatever choice that might be, okay? And so this idea of how do you switch, it's about recognizing those things that are above that you should value because it gets you what you want, and then start focusing on them. And then look at all the things you're already focusing on that are not going to get you the results you're looking for, and deciding I don't need to give that so much attention. or so much emotion, so much desire? Okay? So that's a good question. All right, next.
Okay, from Meek Stalin, how do I treasure up the things of the above versus the things of the below? If not, how do I do that in my daily walk and decisions I make?
Okay, so that's a good follow-up, and I'd like to say hi to Meek, because Meek and I have spoken a few times. That's Uncle Chuck's boy, just so you know. All right, so Meek, look, it's a great follow-up to what Raina said, which is, once you have now realized that you need to treasure and value the things above because they're going to get you the results you want, then you need to focus on every day the things that you're doing and choosing to do or choosing not to do, and ask the question, is it in line with the things I value in the above and getting the result that I want? Because the choices that I make now are going to affect those things. And that's the idea of laying up for yourself. I'm going to rephrase the whole thing just a little bit. Okay? I have taught you many times, and you've probably heard other motivational, success coaches out there say, you are exactly right now, and will always be, the place that all of your decisions have taken you. Yeah, some of where you are has to do with things that were done to you, but then it's the decisions you made after that that really made the difference. Okay? So you are where decisions have taken you. And so every day in your daily walk, you make choices, you make decisions, which is what Meek is asking. And you have to ask yourself, are these decisions going to take me ultimately down the road where I want to be? Because you're where you are because you really didn't think much about where you were going to, how I was going to be when I got to this place. Okay? So I'm about to turn 60 next year, and I can promise you that I wasn't really thinking about what that was going to be like when I was 20 and 30. Okay? Like, hey, these decisions I'm making now, how are they going to affect me when I get to be 40, 50, and 60? Okay, and when I run my class, which I'm working on getting started here in a little bit, it'll be about making sure that you're planning for where you need to be at each 10-year interval. And so that you'll know that what you're doing is consistent with that desired result. I'd like to be here when I turn 40. I'd like to be here when I turn 50. I'd like to be here financially, spiritually, socially, relationship-wise, health-wise, spiritual-wise, everything, okay, right? And then you need to do things that will get you there. You're not just going to get there and change everything all of a sudden, all right? And so, I mean, a lot of you who have health issues and you're 50-plus have health issues because of stuff you did from the time you were 18 till 50-plus. And it's the accumulation of all of those things that didn't affect you as much maybe when you're younger, then it'll come into roost. Because the body can accumulate only so much, and then things start to go a little weird. And so that's a great question. So when you start treasuring things up, then you have to ask yourself on a daily basis, is what I'm doing, are the choices I'm making, consistent with, in line with, the goal of the above? The things I'm treasuring in the above. All right, good question. Thank you, Meek. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us today.